Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Blacksburg, Virginia.
And I'm Joe the Plumber.
Good to have you with us here tonight, Joe. Listen, we have just watched in the past hour the debate between Barack Obama and John McCain. And Ken, I'm just going to have to ask you right out, do you think John McCain did what he needed to do?
Yes, he did. He's now leading in all the polls. Look, what he needed to do was something that could not be done. He needed to turn his entire campaign around. By that means, if he were trailing by 8 to 10 to 12 points in national polls, if he was trailing in the key battleground states, he needed to reverse that trend. Even though he said what he needed to say, he needed to instill doubts about Barack Obama. He needed to remind people that, yes, he's a taxer and a spender. He, you know, goes shopping with Bill Ayers. And he reminded all the voters of that. But did it work? And it did not work. In my opinion, it did not work. I have not seen any polls. But every debate so far, and as John McCain tried to remind voters that it's a risk to vote for Barack Obama, Obama's numbers increased, and I suspect that'll be the case after this debate as well.
Let's look back just briefly across all the debates there have ever been in American presidential elections. Has there ever been a case where somebody came from this far behind on the basis of the debates one time and one time only? Isn't that right?
No, I would say never.
Well, Ronald Reagan was theoretically behind prior to the October 28th debate in 1980.
I don't remember him being behind, frankly.
I remember it being very close. And then after that late debate, late in October, things totally broke in Ronald Reagan's in Ronald Reagan's direction.
Right.
What's different about this year?
Is that it was not close going in. Now, look, a month ago, this race was close.
Sarah Palin was
still exciting the base. The party was uniting behind it. A lot of states that even Michigan, Pennsylvania, there was some movement by John McCain, Minnesota, perhaps Wisconsin. Now, there's not a single, because they're all married, there's not a single blue state, a state that John Kerry won in 2004, that Obama is trailing. And matter of fact, he has huge leads almost everywhere, including Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, states like that, New Hampshire. It's the red states that everybody is looking at
now. Ohio, Florida, Virginia,
North
Colorado.
Carolina, Indiana, Missouri. Those are all Bush states in 2004.
Big time.
And right now, they're, if not even, they're leaning towards Obama. And that's bad news for the Republican Party.
All right, 1980 was a year in which there was a great deal of economic distress. Inflation was double digits. Unemployment was, I believe, somewhere up around approaching double digits. It was a terrible economic year. But this year, perhaps the economic news is even worse, and we certainly would have to attribute that huge turnaround in the last month from when McCain was a little bit ahead to where we are now, primarily to the economic news, would we not?
Absolutely. There's no question. There's not a coincidence. As the bailout began, or the rescue plan began, as Freddie and Fannie went down, as all that started to capture the front pages of the newspapers, you say goodbye to the McCain-Palin lead, and Barack Obama had a lead that he never relinquished. What this election reminds me of, a combination of 1960 with John Kennedy and 1980 with Ronald Reagan. John Kennedy was seen as too, he wasn't black, of course, but he was Catholic, and I think in 1960, being Catholic is probably just as bad as being black with many voters. John Kennedy proved that even though he was young, he had little experience, and he was Catholic, he deserved to be on the same stage as a far more experienced Richard Nixon. Ronald Reagan in 1980 was seen as too far to the right. He was just an actor. He wasn't seen as serious. Voters saw in the debate that he deserved to be on the same stage and, matter of fact, excelled in the debates. The debates helped John Kennedy in 60, Ronald Reagan in 1980, and I suspect it did the same thing for Barack Obama in 2008, that Obama, yes, he's only been in the Senate for 3 years. Yes, he's African-American. Yes, there are some questions about his past associations about that. Everything I saw of Barack Obama in these three debates showed that not only does he deserve to be, you know, on the same playing field as any other candidate, but I suspect that most voters saw him as excelling on the issues and the future of the country.
I think I'd throw in 2000. I think George W. Bush helped himself a great deal in those debates against Al Gore, but that may have been more Al Gore's doing than Bush's. Nonetheless, we have seen debates make a difference. And I think tonight it did seem a little late for John McCain, not only because the numbers were running against him, but also because he had divided tasks. He had to both please his base, the people who are distressed that he's not making a stronger case against Barack Obama, and he had to also try to reach beyond his base to get to independents and Democrats Democrats who might want an excuse not to vote for Barack Obama. And I don't know that he did the latter. I think he did succeed at pleasing a lot of the Republicans who felt he hasn't been tough enough on Barack Obama up to now. Let's listen to a little bit of what he did hit Obama with tonight. He went right at this new character that we have come to know, and of course we're welcoming him here tonight to the podcast. His actual name is Joe Wurzelbacher, not Wurzelberger, as he was introduced by John McCain, but let's listen to a little bit about what the two candidates had to say about Joe the Plumber.
I would like to mention that a couple of days ago, Senator Obama was out in Ohio, and he had an encounter with a guy who's a plumber. His name is Joe Wurzelberger. Joe wants to buy the business that he's been in for all these years. Worked 10, 12 hours a day. And he wanted to buy the business, but he looked at your tax plan, and he saw that he was going to pay much higher taxes. You were going to put him in a higher tax bracket, which was going to increase his taxes, which was going to cause him not to be able to employ people, which Joe was trying to realize the American dream.
And Barack Obama had this to say in response.
Now, the conversation I had with Joe the plumber, what I essentially said to him was, 5 years ago, when you weren't in a position to buy your business, you needed a tax cut then. And what I want to do is to make sure that the plumber, the nurse, the firefighter, the teacher, the young entrepreneur who doesn't yet have money, I want to give them a tax break now. And that requires us to make some important choices.
So the point about Joe the plumber is that if you make over $250,000 as a small business person in profits, your taxes are going to go up under the Barack Obama plan, and that's going to be a burden for this particular Joe the plumber, successful entrepreneur in that service field. Ken, what did you make of the Joe the plumber debate?
Well, I think the debate over his last name was a major one in my book, I think.
Wurzelbacher.
Wurzelbacher did defeat Wurzelberger in straight sets, as I recall. Look, John McCain wanted to make the point, and I think he made the point over and over again, that there's no way that Barack Obama is going to not raise your taxes. He's going to redistribute the wealth, and that's exactly what John McCain campaign had been trying to remind voters all along, that he cannot be trusted, that he's a tax and spend liberal, a big liberal. He's never broken from his party. At the same time, it's hard to imagine in these economic times, in these financial uncertainties, that Barack Obama is going to come through on his proposal that would give 95% of Americans a tax cut. I don't know. Both candidates obviously love the word tax cuts. It's very popular, but I mean, if we're talking about the worst economic crisis since 1929...
$1 trillion deficit, perhaps, next year?
I don't know how we're talking about
it. We're already at $500 billion this year, and possibly again next year, and all these new obligations being taken on in order to bail out the financial industry. A little hard to imagine.
Rescue, not bailout.
Excuse me, rescue. A little hard to imagine all that being done with no tax money at all, but there is obviously a strong belief system out there, particularly in the Republican Party, that any Democrat, and particularly a liberal Democrat like Barack Obama, is just bound to raise taxes, at least on the Republican voting base. And so that is an argument that's going to have a natural audience among a certain number of the people watching the debate. And the same could be true of some of the things that have been alleged in some of the other attacks that have been made by John McCain. Let's listen to the back and forth between the candidates with respect to negative ads.
I think that if you look at the record and the impressions of the American people. Bob, your network just did a poll showing that two-thirds of the American people think that Senator McCain's running a negative campaign versus one-third of mine. And 100%, John, of your ads, 100% of them have been negative.
It's not true. 100,
it absolutely is true.
You know, actually, there is a group at the University of Wisconsin-Madison that has been analyzing negative ads, and they have said that in recent days, just in the most recent days, 100% of John McCain's ads have been, in fact, negative, at least negative in the sense that they make some kind of a comparison that's an invidious comparison that hurts Barack Obama.
Whereas Barack Obama's numbers are only 34% negative, John McCain also made the point that more money has been spent against him on negative ads than any candidate than any time in history.
That's probably true.
It is true because Barack Obama has spent more money, period, on positive and negative ads than any candidate in history.
And John McCain is right in saying that he had run positive ads until recent days, that had been part of his campaign up to then, even though the percentage of them had been lower.
What was most interesting to me about the comment about the discourse of the campaign and how it is sunk, and I think both candidates made very good points. I thought John McCain was hurt, and rightfully so, when John Lewis, the congressman from Georgia, the great civil rights leader, how he compared John McCain and Sarah Palin to lynchings in the South, to burning of churches, to George Wallace. And John McCain was very upset at that. It was demanding an apology, or at least a recusal, from Barack Obama. Barack Obama, on his part, said that what John Lewis was referring to and responding to was that at least one Sarah Palin rally, when she would mention Barack Obama's name, they would yell out, "terrorist," or "kill him." And so I think both sides were justifiably outraged by this kind of tactics. But I think this is what's happened in this campaign. It has gotten very ugly, and I suspect the next 19 days of the campaign will also get even uglier, if that's possible. But John McCain seems to be somebody who's getting all this kind of advice from so many different advisors saying, right, you've got to take him down, you've got to take him down now.
Got to go as negative as anyone has ever gone.
And you, of course, maybe that's
hammer
the only
and
way,
tong, kitchen sink, maybe, hit him with everything.
That's the only way you can win this thing, but in doing so, it seems to incite, even if it's just a handful of people at rally, some of the base, the real ugliness in campaigns, and I suspect that the 19 days that are left, and that this is probably the longest campaign I could ever remember, at least, I mean, we've been doing this for 2 years.
Well, it's certainly the longest podcast. I would like to ask, since we have brought like up the sink and the kitchen sink at that being thrown in this campaign, whether or not
you need
Joe,
a plumber,
plumber,
by the way. If we have
Joe,
a kitchen
what
sink,
would you say?
We need a plumber.
Is the kitchen sink being thrown in this campaign?
I think the kitchen sink, the dishwasher, the washing machine, and everything in between is being thrown in this campaign. And it's become a very dirty and ugly campaign.
Even for Joe the plumber.
Even for Joe the plumber.
Too dirty for the
plumber. And I'm raising my rates after this podcast.
I think that's a good idea because you got to pay all those new taxes. But there were serious issues in the debate. Besides taxes and besides negativity, they talked about appointments to the Supreme Court and other judgeships, and they talked about it in the context of what that would mean for abortion rights and the famous decision of the Supreme Court in 1973, Roe versus Wade.
I will find the best people in the world, in the United States of America, who have a history of strict adherence to the Constitution and
but
not
even if it was
legislating
someone,
from the bench.
Even someone who had a history of being for abortion rights, would you consider them?
I would consider anyone in their qualifications. I do not believe that someone who has supported Roe v. Wade that would be part of those qualifications. But I certainly would not impose any litmus test.
All right.
Look, there's no question in my mind that there's no way that John McCain is going to name a pro-choice nominee to the Supreme Court. There's no way that Barack Obama would name a pro-life person to the Supreme Court. But right now, as it stands right now, it's a narrow 5-4 majority of retaining Roe. If abortion rights is your number one issue, this is a very critical election because both Barack Obama and John McCain see things differently. But having said that, John McCain did say, look, yes, I am pro-life, and I have a solid pro-life record, but I did vote for Stephen Breyer for the Supreme Court. I did vote for Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Two Clinton appointees in the 1990s who were both
exactly,
pro-choice.
And clearly pro-choice, but he said he did it on qualifications. John McCain was trying to make the point that, yes, I am pro-life, but a qualified jurist is far more important, and he pointed out the fact that Barack Obama, on the other hand, voted against Samuel Alito to the Supreme Court.
You know, I thought that was one of the moments in the evening when he did not totally play to the base, when he seemed to be reaching out for people who might disagree with him on an issue and saying, look, don't worry about me as president. I might actually appoint somebody to the Supreme Court that is closer to your position than my position just on qualifications. As you said, it's not likely. Most everyone would expect him to appoint strictly pro-life people to the Supreme Court in particular. But he was at least at that moment trying to be a little bit more in the middle.
The reality is if John McCain is elected, you're going to have a Senate, not 51 Democrats as there are now, but probably 57, 58, 59 Democrats. If John McCain names a strong pro-life candidate or a controversial candidate on the issue of abortion, there's no way in a 58-59 seat Democratic majority Senate a nomination like that is going to get through.
An argument, of course, John McCain could not make in the debate tonight, but perhaps he was teasing toward it with what he did say. You make a good point about the Senate, Ken. It's going to be tough for John McCain, if he is elected president, to put appointments through that Senate that the Senate has any resistance to. What about the House? What are we expecting to see in the House on November 4th?
Well, everybody's talking about anywhere between 15 and 20 additional Democratic seats. There are a lot of Republicans retiring, but I can't talk about House races without talking the gift from God, which is Florida's 16th congressional district.
The district, I believe, that was represented by a rather famous Republican 2 years ago who was seen as the symbol of the Republican woes of that election year.
Part of the reason why the Republicans lost so many seats in 2006 was the culture of corruption, as the Democrats like to say. Of course, part of it was the war in Iraq, but it was also people like Mark Foley, the Republican in the 16th District of Florida in Palm Beach County. Conservative Republican was caught by ABC News, as it turned out, sending lurid internet emails to underage male congressional pages. This is a pro-life party. They don't usually stand for this kind of behavior. And Mark Foley quickly resigned from Congress. His Democratic opponent at the time was a guy named Tim Mahoney, who said that we need to bring moral values back to Washington, D.C.
Now, I think Tim Mahoney was quite thundering in his condemnation of any sort of sexual impropriety at that time.
He was, and he was the first Democrat elected to that district in a long, long time. But as he was running those ads in 2006, according to ABC News This Week, he was having an affair with a campaign staffer. And apparently this campaign staffer was about to accuse Tim Mahoney of sexual harassment. And according to ABC News, Tim Mahoney offered a hush payment of $121,000 to this woman if she would keep quiet. And matter of fact, he could maybe find her a job somewhere else. The fact that that Tim Mahoney is the guy who won the district of Mark Foley in 2006 because he would bring moral values back to Washington, unlike that pervert Mark Foley, when we have somebody who's been cheating on his wife and family all along, and I think it's just almost too delicious for words. I mean, sometimes we get these stories that we just can't believe that they really happen.
Not helping the Democratic effort in Florida in general, a state they'd like to take in the presidential election, and obviously a state where they'd like to continue the momentum they had in the House races from 2006. By the way, whatever happened to the Vito Fisella case? Ken, that's the Staten Island, New York district that was represented by Republican Vito Fisella, the fellow who turned out to have a family there on Staten Island and also one in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area.
Well, I don't know what you see. The problem is because the Republican Party is a pro-family party, and Fisella just happened to have two families.
So who is going to take that seat now? Vito Fisella, obviously, is
leading. A clear
leader.
Democratic pickup. Matter of fact, the Republicans were so desperate, one of its anointed candidates was picked by the Staten Island Republican establishment. He died shortly after that. It's been a nightmare of a year for Republicans so badly that many of them wanted Vito Fisella to run. After all that's happened, Fisella said, no, that seat is a clear Democratic pickup.
So a little bit of a setback for both parties in terms of the personal scandals, but a general overall trend very much like what we're seeing elsewhere, which is voters frustrated with what's happening with the economy, voters taking out their frustrations on the Bush administration and on the Bush administration's Republican Party.
What Republicans are trying to do, they would love to repeat what the Democrats did successfully in 2006. They want to point to Charlie Rangel and Tim Mahoney and saying, this is a Democratic culture of corruption, but from all evidence that these seem to be more isolated. Either the Democrats were more effective as campaigners in 2006 than Republicans are, or voters say, look, these are instances which should not be tolerated, but the big issue is not the culture of corruption, it's not anything else, it's the economic future, and that's helping the Democrats. So even though there are some bad apples, it doesn't look like it's going to stop the Democrats from making sizable gains in both the House and Senate.
So a second cycle in a row in which the Democrats lose no seats at all in the Senate, no incumbents defeated, and no retirees replaced by members of the other party. That would be unprecedented in American history for the Democratic Party.
And, of course, remember, you know, be careful what you wish for, because we saw 1992, Bill Clinton elected president, solid Democratic control of the House and Senate. Not much got done. It led to the Gingrich Revolution in 1994. But here's where I see a difference. I think people are starting to realize that this is major problems. This is not just a political problem. This is a major structural problem that results need to be made. And somehow I think that 2009, under Democratic leadership, will be more successful than it was in 1993.
We may have to hold you to that, Ken. But for
Please
now,
do.
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And I'm still Joe the Plumber.
Join us next week for It's All Politics from NPR News.
I'll wait every day for the salesman to come around. He brings me electricity to run the motors. kitchen.